It is 4 minutes after 8 o'clock. Welcome to KGNU's Morning Magazine. It is Thursday, August 4th of 2022. I am your host, Rosanna Longo-Better, in for Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on Listeners Supported Community Radio. Coming up on today's program, we will hear about a panel discussion on art and community hosted by Boulder County Arts Alliance, taking place today. This time on the Cannabis Report, Leland Rocker discusses a national movement to decriminalize plants and plant-like substances as Coloradans prepare to vote on one or more initiatives removing certain psychedelic plants and fungi from complete prohibition statewide. And Radio Nibble's host, John Landorf, joins us in the studio to catch us up on local food news. At the bottom of the hour, we will have the BBC news headlines, and then we have an extended Radio Nibbles about diversity and sustainability in restaurants, among other topics. And at 9:30, Dennis Ryder will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that is coming up, but first we will start with headlines with KGNU's Christian Garibay.
Support staff at Denver Public Schools will see a raise in their wages this coming school year. After months of negotiations, the district has reached agreements with multiple organizations that represent workers from paraprofessionals to custodial staff to patrol officers. Food workers and custodians in the district will now earn more than $18 an hour, and classroom aides will earn a minimum of $20 an hour. In a press release, DPS indicated the minimum wage for all workers will increase to $20 per hour by the 2024-2025 school year. The increase comes as multiple districts in the state of Colorado are following the same steps due to recent cost of living hikes that make it difficult for staff to remain in their positions. Denver Public Schools has been ordered to pay $2.1 million to settle a lawsuit in which the district was found to have misrepresented staff service hours to the federal government. In this case, Denver Public Schools falsely reported staff service hours to get the AmeriCorps grant. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office, six DPS programs were not qualified to earn over $500,000 in grant money, but were granted over $800,000 in cash based on their false certifications. The district had to report staff office hours to get an education award, which falsely reported some hours. According to the Colorado Sun, DPS said in a written statement, "DPS maintains its actions were in alignment with its core mission of educating youth. The school district is currently conducting its investigation into the irregularities of staff members." Edgewell recalls banana boat spray sunscreens after detecting cancer-causing benzene. KGNU's Chiara Damari has more.
On Sunday, the Edgewell Personnel Care Company announced a recall of banana boat sunscreen after it was discovered that a carcinogen, known as benzene, was in one of its more popular products. According to a press release from Edgewell Personnel Care Company, benzene can occur by inhalation, orally, and through the skin, and it potentially can result in cancers, including leukemia and blood cancer of the bone marrow, and blood disorders which can be life-threatening. To date, Edgewell has not received any adverse events related to this recall. The three products being recalled are the Banana Boat Hair and Scalp Spray SPF 30 that expires in December of 2022, February 2023, and April of 2024. Contact Edgewell Personnel Care at 1-888-686-3988, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Customers may also visit www.bananaboat.com for more information and to learn how to receive reimbursement for eligible products. For KGNU, I'm Chiara Damari.
The Denver Department of Transportation and Infrastructure, or DOTI, will include the repairing of hazardous sidewalks as a part of Denver's annual concrete maintenance program. The decision was made in order to spend fund dollars in an efficient manner and as a backup plan in case the Denver Deserves Sidewalks ballot fails to pass. The decision made by the DOTI will result in the replacement of the neighborhood sidewalk repair program. The funding for the addition will be sourced from parking meter rates, parking citations, and an annual general fund appropriation. As of now, the DOTI has accumulated a total of $1.2 million from current contracts with numerous concrete companies to help with the repairs. The locations that will receive these repairs will be influenced by areas that the annual concrete maintenance program will focus on and other factors like level of damage and tilt. The first sidewalk locations that will receive these repairs will be the boundaries of 26th Avenue from 35th Avenue and Downing Street to York Street. The Rocky Mountain National Park is now more accessible for more people. KGNU's Jimmy Searfoss has more.
All-terrain wheelchairs are now available for free for any Rocky Mountain National Park guests who may need one. These wheelchairs feature a third wheel that extends out the front of the wheelchair and comes with levers on each side to aid in getting through that mountain terrain. It also has handles on the back for pushing if necessary. They are said to handle rocky trails, dirt paths, and even snow. The chairs were donated by the Sam Schneider Legacy Foundation and aim to expand access to the Rocky Mountain National Park to everyone. Reservations can be made through the Estes Park Mountain Shop. I'm Jimmy Searfoss for KGNU.
The town of Superior now has a new water filtration system in place to resolve issues lingering from the Marshall Fire. Town officials announced yesterday that the granular activated carbon filtration, or GAC system, has been installed at the town's water treatment facility. The installation of the filtration system came after months of complaints by residents that the town's water had an unpleasant taste and smell. Even though the Public Works and Utilities Department started cleaning up the water supply back in January, the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, Boulder County Public Health, and Corona Environmental Consulting, who recommended the filtration system, declared the water to be compromised. Installation of the new filtration system took around 3 months to complete. An Ozone Action Day alert is in effect until at least 4 p.m. today across the Front Range Urban Corridor. Health officials advise active children and adults and people with lung disease, such as asthma, to reduce prolonged or heavy outdoor exertion due to poor air quality. Expect sunny weather all throughout the Front Range today with a slight chance of rain. In Boulder, a high of 94 and a low of 66. In Denver, a high of 96 and a low of 70. In Fort Collins, a high of 95 and a low of 65. For KGNU, I'm Christian Garibay.
At the beginning of the pandemic, a report commissioned by Colorado Creative Industries found that between April and July 2020, Colorado's music industry alone lost over 8,000 jobs and nearly $350 million in sales revenue. As pandemic restrictions ease this year, hopes are high the arts-based economy can make a recovery. Boulder County has one of the highest per capita concentrations of artists in the country, with the art scene playing a key role in the community. I spoke with Charlotte Lasasso, Executive Director of Boulder County Arts Alliance, about a panel discussion they are hosting on art and community and how she sees the process of recovery from the pandemic, gun violence, and wildfires for the Boulder County arts community. I have the opportunity to speak with Charlotte Lasasso, Executive Director of Boulder County Arts Alliance. They're having a panel discussion on art and community at El Dorado Springs Arts Center from 6 to 7:30 today. What are the highlights of this event, Charlotte?
Well, I think one of them is that people will get to see, if they haven't already seen, the El Dorado Springs Arts Center. It's really an amazing, just beautiful little space that's tucked away in El Dorado Springs. And then the other panelists are just very interesting people. Caroline Kurt, who's an attorney and a Burning Man participant and artist and producer. And Leo Bambacchini, who is the first artist in residence at a collaborative residency program that we're doing with the Art Center.
How would you describe the process of recovering from the pandemic in the Boulder County arts community?
I think it's been a mixed bag. There are some artists that have done quite well, some organizations that have been just fine, and then others, like we've all heard about the gig workers who immediately, without warning, lost everything, you know, all of their jobs. So I think it's been particularly hard for them, but people are recovering. Other artists and disciplines like theater, sometimes were able to navigate the COVID environment and figure out ways to produce their work and actually get paid to do it. So it's all over the map.
We were able to see the creativity of the artist presenting in different creative ways so that they can continue connecting with the audience. That is extremely important. How is it that Boulder County Arts Alliance continue to provide support to local artists during this time and continues to provide support?
Well, that's what we do. That's why we exist, is to support artists. So, we have an investment account from which we're able to make grants. We have some donors who help us fund donor advised grant making. We have staff. We've been able to keep staff throughout the whole pandemic and continuing, and we just do it. Professional development, it was easier for us to pivot, I think, than for some artists, and then a lot of artists, because we could just go online and present what we do.
So we saw everything, but we also saw something that I am super proud to report, that is the coming together of artists to create almost like a union, so that they can support each other and they can really promote different ways of collaborative efforts.
We didn't talk about was the fact that not only was there a pandemic, then there was mass shooting, then there was terrible, terrible wildfires. So we've really been hit hard in Boulder County. Thankfully, there are a lot of artists, more artists per capita in Boulder County than almost any other city its size in the country. And I think that's been a real blessing for us, that we've been able to enjoy the fruits of their labor.
That's what they are, artists. They transform painful situations into pieces of art. You recently organized a training for artists on how to use social media platforms to promote their work. How big is the need for artists to learn these skills?
It's huge. Without the professional development side of things, they have no mechanism to get their work out there. So they have to know. And social media is so important. That's the main vehicle of communication for most younger artists. So we try to identify the needs and bring in the people to present the trainings.
You're completely right. Precisely when the pandemic started, I remember people saying, how can we promote what we are doing? Help us. Let people know. And then is when you realize that they needed websites, they needed accounts, they needed followers. You have to pivot and you have to do it. It really happened. Is there anything else listeners should know about what Boulder County Arts Alliance is doing to support the artist and the art in Boulder County?
Just that we're working hard to do it. And if anybody has any needs, they should check out our website and see if we address them. And they can certainly contact me at info@bouldercountyarts.org, and I'm happy to have a conversation.
Thank you so much. I have been speaking with Charlotte Lasasso, Executive Director of the Boulder County Arts Alliance, about the process of economic recovery from the pandemic and all the support that Boulder County Arts Alliance provide to local artists.
And now it's time for the Cannabis Report here on KGNU Community Radio. I'm Hannah Lee Myers, and as always, I'm joined by longtime cannabis correspondent Leland Rucker. Leland, thank you so much for being here this morning.
Always good.
So this morning, we're going to step a little bit out of the cannabis lane and talk about efforts that are now reaching Colorado to take other plants and plant-like substances off the ranks of the illegal or completely illegal. What can you tell us about this news?
Well, definitely psychedelics are in the news. I mean, every day you see something new on psychedelics, and it's been less than 3 years. It'll be 3 years in November that Denver voters narrowly made possession of psychedelics the lowest police priority at the time. And since then, it's just been an explosion. I remember asking one of the people who was involved in it, did you expect this? They said, no, not at all, within months. Like Ann Arbor, Michigan, which is the home of the hash bash over the last 50 years, the hash bash began as a protest of the arrest of John Sinclair for two joints, and now the City Council of Ann Arbor, Michigan, proclaimed that the possession of all natural substances which can change people's consciousness for spiritual or religious purposes, that's like ayahuasca, ibogaine, mescaline, peyote, psilocybin, and mushrooms, the lowest police priority in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And other cities around the country have followed suit. Ann Arbor City Council members, it's coming up next month in September, and it's going to be the month to understand the role mushrooms and entheogens play in our lives. And, you know, it's similar to the legalization of marijuana. That was off limits for like 20 or 30 years, and marijuana, no legalization. And then people started seeing therapeutic benefits, and that's when the legalization movement kind of got going again, and Colorado voters made it legal 10 years ago, 10 years ago. You know, there's a series on Netflix right now by Michael Pollan, the food guy, based on a book he wrote, and as I recall, he says, you know, psychedelics were being researched and studied in the 1950s and 1960s, but that changed as a kind of experimentation overcame the idea of therapy. I was part of that. And the government finally, in the 70s, outlawed psychedelics, and all that research and all that study came to an end. And now Colorado voters, state voters, will decide this November whether physicians in the state will be allowed to prescribe psychedelic medicines for treating certain mental health conditions in qualifying patients. That's what the initiative is. It follows a formal review and the recent approval of a proposed ballot. The Colorado Secretary of State's Election Division approved this one. And Colorado Natural Medicine is the group that's organizing this ballot initiative effort. And they announced that Initiative 58, which is what it's called, the Natural Medicine Health Act, submitted more than 200,000 Colorado voter signatures, and it's going to be there on the ballot. And that would create access to psilocybin under the regulations of the Colorado Department of Regulatory Agencies, which is also known as DORA, and it would allow physicians to prescribe psychedelics to patients 21 years and older suffering from depression and PTSD. If passed, it would allow regulated access to psychedelic mushrooms in 2024, and Colorado Natural Medicine has said that in 2026 they would work to include other psychedelic medicines.
So to clarify, this Initiative 58 would be just for treatment of depression and PTSD.
Correct.
And it would be just for use for medical purposes. So no recreational, no personal use. Okay.
Right.
Okay. I mean, what has been the response to this thus far?
Well, you know, there are a lot of people that like to see this, you know, they really want to see this pass, but not everybody is on board with it who is involved in psychedelics. Some psychedelic fans don't like the reliance on traditional medicine, for instance, or that there's no personal use in the wording that they have. And so there's a competing initiative, Initiative 61. Actually, the signatures are due on August 8th. And so there might be two initiatives on the ballot. Initiative 61 would not create the state-regulated market. It would decriminalize possession of certain psychedelic plants and fungi. And sponsors argue that the regulated access program proposed under Initiative 58, the one that's already on the ballot, would allow companies to profit off of psychedelics. That's the main argument against it. And organizer Melanie Rose Rogers said decriminalization isn't a popular thing for companies and corporations and venture capital. Decriminalization is for the people. And that really comes down to it. No one should be in prison, or no one should be in jail, or no one should be arrested for ingesting a substance. That just is simple.
And it certainly seems like, even when you look at politics and policy, that that's the direction that a lot of municipalities all the way up to states are going, questioning this idea of making plants and plant-like substances completely illegal.
Yeah, questioning that idea, which is what we should have been doing the last 30 or 40 years. But of course, they were just illegal because of the experimentation thing. And so we'll be following this, and we'll see what happens in November. You know, the Denver initiative just barely passed. So we'll see what happens statewide. I think it's going to be fascinating.
Interesting. Well, you can tune in here to the Cannabis Report the first and third Thursday of every month, and we'll keep you posted. Leland, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
For KGNU, I'm Hannah Lee Myers.
Everybody eats when they come to my house. I fix your favorite dishes. Hoping this good food fills you.
Work my hands to the bone in the kitchen.
It's time for Radio Nibbles, and John Landorf is here to share some food news. How are you this morning?
Oh, just great. It's a beautiful morning in Boulder. Welcome everybody around the big KGNU, buffet table here. We've got a wonderful show coming up. We're going to be talking with several chefs about sustainability. But right now, it's time for to catch up on a little news about local food. There's a new restaurant in, actually there's two of them, in Lyons. Marigold just opened. A wonderful chef, Theo Adley, just opened it. It's a European bistro and looks really great. Also, a panaderia just opened in Lafayette. It's called Sweet Bites Panaderia.
Sounds really yummy. I am dying for a
pastry, yes.
Delicious bread, warm, if it's possible.
Well, luckily, there's some pie coming. We'll talk about that soon. And it's on South Boulder Road. There's also another place called the Diner Bar that just opened in Lyons. Also, there's a wonderful coffee shop in Longmont. It's called the Miko Coffee Collective. I've written about that, talked to those folks before. But they've just opened a second place. It's where Precision Pours was in Louisville. It's right at Main Street and South Boulder Road in a very odd building next to the railroad tracks. So I'm excited about that. They're great people. Also, there was this restaurant that launched in Boulder. Well, it launched as a food truck selling Chinese street food. It was called the Ginger Pig. And the chef finally got to open a brick-and-mortar location in Denver. But she's coming back and opening it up on the hill as a takeout place.
You said Ginger Pig?
It's called, yes, it's called the Ginger Pig. It's a former lawyer turned chef who traveled in China and served some wonderful food. So I'm glad that's coming back.
That's delicious. It sounds really good. I'm a hungry one this morning, to tell you the truth. It's so delicious, you know, just to think about good food always.
Yes.
You know, what's in the Nibbles column today?
Well, Nibbles itself is about how to cook corn on the cob. And it's a combination of, there's five different things that I talk about. I also talk about how my mother used to overboil. See, she would boil corn, and that kind of ruined it. But grilling and poaching and other ways to appreciate corn now that it's in season. I also wanted to direct your attention to last week's column, which is all about high-altitude baking in Boulder and up in the mountains. People who move here often find that their recipes simply don't work.
You have to add a little pinch of extra things to make it puffy. That's what I noticed.
And also more moisture. Things tend to dry out here, so adding humidity and water really helps. So I direct your attention to that. And also, speaking of corn, you know, there's a guide to farm stands that's also at boulderweekly.com that I encourage you very much to get out there and buy from the farmers.
Super important. You know, talking about overcooking, you're right. It is much better to boil the water and then throw the corn in. That's what I noticed. It's much, much better. But what about, what's the best thing you have eaten lately?
I got one more question for you, because I know we have a second. When you were growing up, did you eat corn on the cob, or was it used in other preparations?
We did everything, even...
But how was it cooked?
You know...
It's roasted?
It's roasted, but it's also, we make a lot of cakes with the corn.
Using the corn, the fresh corn?
Yes, and then just, you know, also salads with corn.
Okay.
Super yummy.
The best thing I've eaten lately, I went to the Roost in Longmont for the first time last night. And I had this just killer cauliflower that was in a tempura, you know, batter that was just wonderful, and I really enjoyed it.
You can read John Neibel's column at boulderweekly.com and listen to past Radio Neibels at kgnews.org. Bon appetit.
Everybody eats when they come to my house. I fix your favorite dishes. Hoping this good food fills ya. Work my hands to the bone in the kitchen.
And that's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine here on listener-supported community radio. I have been your host, Rosanna Longo-Better. Special thanks to Christian Garibay, Kiara DiMare, Luis Licon, Shannon Young, Hannah Lee Mayers, Leland Rocker, and John Lendorf for their contributions to today's program. Stay tuned for a supersized Radio Neibels. But first, these news headlines from the BBC.
Is big plans to fight the climate crisis, and an investigation finds that sanctioned Russian oligarchs have exploited a secrecy loophole left open by the British government. After this summary of the news.